Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, over the rainbow, gotta let it go. So far, fast and free. Stars to light together. You and me on the stage.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for March 17th, 2026. It is 3:08 Central Standard Time. I'm Mike Spears. I'm joined alongside Kay Slow, and we're going to start this episode with a press release that was released earlier this morning. It hit Twitter, at least, so it was in the sport blog before this, but it hit Twitter at approximately 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. This is a clean translation of what was posted on the Dragon Gate blog and later retweeted. To all concerned parties and fans, we sincerely thank you for your continued support of Dragon Gate. We have recently become aware of a former affiliated wrestler of Dragon Gate has disseminated information containing numerous false statements suggesting that our company and its related parties were involved in serious illegal acts in the past. Needless to say, there's absolutely no truth to any claim that our company or its related parties were involved in such serious illegal acts. We find it extremely regrettable and unacceptable that such baseless information has been unilaterally disseminated. We have already retained legal counsel regarding this matter with respects to acts that constitute defamation and damage to our credibility, such as in this case, we are considering strict measures, including legal action. Furthermore, we will continue to place the highest priority on compliance and remain committed to the continued development of Dragon Gate. We sincerely ask everyone to not easily believe or spread false information. We deeply apologize for any concern that this situation may have caused, and we ask you for your continued support of Dragon Gate going forward. March 16th, 2026, Dragon Gate Company Limited. In case it is time with that to have a very serious and deep talk about the Shima and Magnum Tokyo talk show that happened on February 28th. We've been working on this for a couple of weeks. This news hit kind of hit today, but Case, I think we kind of just go from here on this. But before we get like really deep into the nitty gritty, this is a serious kind of situation that we want to. That we wanted to put all the time and effort, and we have had people that have very nicely have helped us out with our research and translations and such for this. And I wanted to point that out before we get going. A lot of this is actual translation, not machine translation. We find that to be kind of important considering some of the things that we're going to be talking about on this episode, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this feels like the biggest thing that we've talked about since maybe the departures of Kento and Fujiwara, which is something that we were incredibly close to and very much on in the summer of 2022. You know, that was a story that you and I had considered breaking a few different times, and we just continued to hold off. I think maybe in part wishful thinking, hoping that something would change, and that it never did. And, you know, Dave Meltzer was the one that ended up breaking that story. And we were very quick to back him up because we had heard the same things that Dave had. And then before that, you have to go back to the split in 2018, which will come up on this show quite often. And I always credit you with you having your ear to the ground and you being in the right place at the right time. And I would say over the decade that I have covered Dragon Gate, those feel like maybe two really big stories. And this, you know, as we're what feels like now in the early stages of this story, could very easily be the third biggest thing that we've talked about. But just to set context a little bit, Mike, if you don't mind explaining why Magnum Tokyo and Shima are back together, why Magnum Tokyo and Shima were doing a talk show together, and when exactly that was again.
So this kind of follows up when we were talking, and this would have been in January, about Shima going freelance from Glate and launching his own note blog service, which is a blog that's popularized within Japan. And it's also noted as a way to kind of do like a fan based like donation system for it. And we were talking about him and his take on his departure from Dragon Gate back in January. So this story kind of dates all the way back to Eichmann Jiro Kurashio's Uptown Produce, and when Magnum Tokyo kind of came in from out of the dark in 2024. And after that, him and Shima quickly reconnect at that show, and it's like 19 years haven't happened between the two. And all through that, through 2025, they reestablish their relationship. There's things that happen in 2025 that we will be talking about from this talk show on this episode. But it all culminates on February 28th, 2026, when Shima did a fan meet talk show, essentially, with him and Magnum Tokyo, capitalizing on the obvious interest of the two aces of the Torimon era. Getting together and talking. They have a reporter by the name of Osaki work as the MC for this, and there's a 2.5 hour talk show that happens, and nothing really hits the internet until last week with Yamato's response to a Yahoo Sports article up talking about things that were mentioned during the talk show. It later, Magnum Tokyo, who does not have any social media whatsoever, starts a YouTube channel where he posts approximately 2.5 hours of this talk show. And from here, we should kind of actually get into the content of the talk show.
Well, let me stop you there. Yeah. Let me stop you there. So a few things that I think are relevant here. One is that, you know, Magnum was the first Torimon ace. He's one of Ultimo's first students in 1997, where Shima, Magnum, Dragon Kid, Don Fuji, and Suwa, those are the guys that make their way to Mexico first. They're the original Torimon class. I've been thinking a lot about them this week as we sort of ramp up and approach the 10-year anniversary of the class of 2016 now. And I've seen Hyo tweeting a lot about this recently where, you know, Hyo might be
a VoiceGate listener.
Hyo basically did tweet about last week's episode. But nevertheless, you know, we're coming up on 10 years of Ben and Hyo and Shun and Yoshioka. And I'm planning on doing some writing about those guys here in the near future, because I think the only class that you can possibly compare them to, the only class that might be better than they are, is the original five. But the original five leave behind such an odd legacy, with Magnum being the weirdest of the bunch. And part of the reason that it's noteworthy that he came back and resurfaced on the Jiro Produce show, and then the stuff that he did with Harata and DDT, is Magnum leaves Dragon Gate in 2006, and I have direct quotes of him talking about that press conference and talking about his exit from the company that we'll get to during the course of this podcast. But Magnum leaves Dragon Gate, you know, for all intents and purposes, in 2006. He officially leaves in 2007. Mm-hmm. And outside of a brief stint in Hustle, which then he would leave because Hustle was running out of money and he was not going to work for free.
Hustle got kind of lumped in to Pride in the DSC Yakuza scandal.
So
it had no money.
Magnum was gone completely in the 2010s. It's part of what makes his legacy as odd as it is when you're a new Dragon Gate fan jumping in, is he has no ties to a Bushiroad era of Japanese professional wrestling. He was a ghost. He was gone. Nobody saw him. You and I would hear things maybe once a year. It's like, oh, Magnum Tokyo is teaching karate, but he's in very poor health. You know, there was a lot of hearsay about where he was or what he was doing.
Right. I up until 2024, I had only seen one somewhat recent photo of Magnum Tokyo, and that might have been in the mid 2010s. Like, he went to dirt and he just disappeared, and he was going to teach karate across the world, and that was the thing. But the thing about Magnum is that he has this eye injury in 2006. He's summarily fired in 2007, and he goes dark, and he was completely unseen for essentially 18 years, and then now he has come out all guns a-blazing, essentially.
It's why a few years ago when Sua resurfaced that it was such a big deal to some of us, because Sua, you know, defected from Dragon Gate and then had a very nice career in Noah and was around at the very least. But after that second stint in Noah that he had, which I think ended in 2013, Sua also disappeared. And you and I heard very scary things about Sua's health and how he was near death. And it's why when he started going to those house shows in 2022 and 2023, it was a real feel-good story. And I've mentioned it on this podcast before that, you know, I had conversations with Sua and I really tried to nail down an interview with him. And for a few different reasons, that interview just did not work out in the way that I was hoping that it would. And then Sua got sick again and we haven't really heard from him. But it's very funny to me and it's very strange to me that, you know, one, I've had conversations with Sua, and two, that is a man who follows my personal Instagram. And so every once in a while, I'll look at, you know, I'll post a video from like a punk show in Chicago and I'll look to see who looked at it. And Sua is one of the names on the list. And Masaki Mochizuki will be right behind it, which is a weird life that I live. But
Sua and Masaki Mochizuki watching your turnstile video.
Yes, it's a very strange thing. But, you know, Magnum was just this enigma. I mean, part of it, and this goes back to just the weird legacy that he has, mm-hmm. and this is why I think this story is such a big deal, is you have to remember at the beginning of Toryumon, you know, Magnum is the star, and the way that Dragon Gate would be, or this at this point is Toryumon, you know, the way that Toryumon would be covered to some degree was it's sideshow wrestling, it breaks tradition, but goddamn Magnum Tokyo's entrance, that is something, let me tell you. I mean, that was almost the way that the publications would talk about Toryumon time after time. And even as his career got really weird into 03, 04, 05, and I mentioned all the time, for as great as 2005 is for Dragon Gate, it's one of the best years of company history. You know, Magnum is sort of the weak link because, one, he's at this point, his body's already deteriorating and he's struggling to keep up in the ring, but then his booking is also so strange that it becomes a distraction at points in the promotion. But this is a guy who was the first top star. He was the first top draw. He is the guy that spearheads leaving Toryumon and creating Dragon Gate, and then he's gone so soon after the creation of Dragon Gate, and it's just been a very odd legacy that he has left behind. And so that's why it's such a big deal that he resurfaced when he did, and that's why Magnum saying these things, and we'll get into the specifics, which would be explosive if anybody had said it, but Magnum saying these things, I think, holds extra weight, even compared Shima saying them, mm-hmm. let alone, you know, name your defect, your brother Yashi or your Shuji Kondo or whoever, you know, it's just Magnum's going to hold more weight. The other thing that I want to note really quick is, you're right, this was not really a story until Yamato made it a story. And you and I have talked at length on this podcast. I recommend everybody, if they want more context on Yamato's specific thoughts on Shima and the people that have left Dragon Gate, go back to our Kobe World 2024 review.
2024. Yeah.
Yes. When Yamato beats Ben K for the Open the Dream Gate Championship and then cuts probably the closest thing that we've ever had to a shoot promo in Dragon Gate to close out their biggest show of the year, where he wins the world title. It's his sixth reign as Dream Gate champion. And he is addressing Shima and T-Hawk almost by name in the promo and talking about the people that have left and talking about how he doesn't respect them. And in the same way that we had a professional translator and a human translator transcribe some of this talk show stuff. We had the same thing for that Yamato promo to make sure that we were getting the details fully correct. So this is something that most of the roster has stayed very quiet about, but Yamato, perhaps be it the stature that he has in Dragon Gate, perhaps the fact that he is bothered by this on a truly, deeply personal level, whatever it may be, he is the one from the Dragon Gate side that continues to acknowledge these guys and continues to stoke the flame when he sees fit.
Yeah, and I think that there's two things that we should talk about with one with Yamato that I'll just say first. Odds are, and we won't, and the way that Dragon Gate operates is also kind of a story in of itself in this, with the way that how it is closed off here. There's a better than 50% chance that outside of Ryo Saito and some of the other kind of wrestlers, Yamato is probably number two or number three on like the booking room depth chart. And when we talk about some of the things that are mentioned here, it's probably not without the outside the realm of imagination, in case I don't think I'm telling a story out of school here, that Yamato was likely directly involved in some of these things that at least are mentioned as it relates to like 2018. So there's
I would assume he is. I mean, look, I would love to see a Dragon Gate org chart right now, because I might want to make some changes for who's in the room. I don't know if the booking committee, I don't know if this has been a gold medal year, to say the least. I think maybe some
who's
people
in the room and who's not.
Maybe some people are out of ideas. Maybe it's time we shuffle the deck a little bit, get some new voices in that room. I would certainly suggest doing so, but I think from the bare bones knowledge that you and I have of the inner workings of this company, that Yamato has a certain level of stroke that not every wrestler has.
Yeah, the person that the stroke that I would love to see just completely editorializing is Don Fuji's stroke, because allegedly he has some. So, but my second point, and as it relates to Magnum.
Yes, because we just saw him wrestle Tetsumi Fujinami, and so I think he got his wish.
Yeah. But as it relates to Magnum, I think that one thing that we haven't touched on yet is the terms of his departure, because I think that that is something that as we get into the talk show itself, it is worth saying, like, what the story has been, I think, is the fair thing to say about this, about Magnum, and why it, and not to assassinate his character immediately. Although by the end of this episode, I feel like everyone will be aware of my stance on Magnum Tokyo in 2026, but he did not leave in good standing, and he left in a certain way that, you know, as we're talking about some of the things that Magnum said, it is indicative on how things have operated in the company over the last 20 years. Magnum did not leave on good terms. And there was, I mean, I'll just outright say it. Jay mentions it on his podcast that he had on iHeartDG 15 years ago, that Magnum was fired after being caught embezzling the money from the transit fund, like the bus money, essentially.
Which is something that Yamato just referenced in one of his tweets.
Correct. Yes. And so I think that with that, unless we have like any other like touching
moments, I guess the only other point I'll add on Magnum real quick, and it will shine through when we talk about some of these quotes, but you know, like, Shima's departure is more recent, and Shima's departure, I think, especially for the English-speaking fan base, the people that associate him with PWG and Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate USA, I think that one's been a little bit more jarring to see him not borderline be erased from history, but to be erased from history. It's a very odd thing. But Shima's beef was with President Kido, who now runs the company. The spot that Magnum was in was he helped start Dragon Gate with President Okamura, but then he had a falling out with Okamura and he had a falling out with Kido. So he was just completely annexed from the history of this promotion long before Shima was.
Yes, and not to go completely far ahead, but he talks about in this talk show that essentially he was Ultimo's bagman, essentially leading up to Toriyama in Japan. And essentially when Okamura kind of got put in, Okamura brought in Kido, and he says that he essentially got kind of forced out of the room by a legitimate business person, and not legitimate business person with quotation marks, like someone who actually, you know, is not a wrestler who actually like runs businesses or works in like a standard office environment. And that is a big issue that I think bleeds through this entire 2.5 hour talk show.
So let me read from a portion of the talk show in which both Magnum Tokyo and Shima talk about their departures from Dragon Gate. I think for the Magnum stuff, this will largely just reemphasize some of the points that we've made in the beginning of this podcast, and then we'll end with the Shima stuff, which I feel like at this point you and I have a pretty strong timeline of when some of this stuff happened, and we haven't really talked about Shima in this podcast. We won't talk about Shima a ton. This was his talk show that became the Magnum Tokyo show, but nevertheless.
Yeah, and we've and the Shima point, I would say, if we're looking at this from a timeline of stuff from Shima over the last few months, he's been very, very consistent about this, and nothing that he has said on this talk show really has contradicted anything that he has said. And really, the one news note from Shima on this talk show is the same thing that we have known. And it's like that Shima would like to do a Dragon Gate match before he retired. That's like the one thing that Shima really kind of says during this entire thing.
Yes. And I think that is going to be much tougher once we get through some of these transcriptions. So Magnum says concerning his leaving Dragon Gate, "I was summarily kicked out by the head of the company at the time, alongside the managing director, who is now the current chief executive," which that would be President Kido, correct?
Yes. The president of the company up until 2018 was Takashi Okamura, who passes away in 2025. That will become an important note later on in the show. And Toru Kido, who comes aboard essentially in 2004, who is the managing director up until 2018, but then becomes the actual president of Dragon Gate from 2018 until present.
Yeah, so Magnum says that he was kicked out by both of those guys, and he continues, quote, "in the exact same way that Hatoyama, who was head of events at the time, would be kicked out 18 months later. That's just the fact of the matter. When they held the press scrum, I was absolutely sick to my stomach, fed up of so many things. When I told them I was leaving wrestling behind, they responded saying the company would handle the arrangements for the press scrum. And that's how we got, quote, extended hiatus, but for all intents and purposes, I'm gone," end quote. "At the time, I was in really poor physical condition, and I just thought those dickheads were taking the absolute piss. I had no desire whatsoever to be involved in wrestling ever again." Ozaki then asks, this is the host of the talk show, "but at that point, surely you could have jumped ship to another promotion, being as popular as you were." Magnum responds, "don't think that hadn't crossed my mind. When the offer from Hustle came in, as Tenru's comment was, quote, it doesn't matter what you've said that you were quitting wrestling. That was circumstances dictating. Come on over to us," end quote. "And that is when I spoke to Yamaguchi, who was head of Hustle at the time. He had the absolute nerve to say, well, don't you know you've got some horrible reputation in the industry, so you should try working somewhere else as a free agent? We'll arrange that somewhere else. So once you're cleared your trial, then we'll go ahead and sign you to Hustle. That's how I want to do it." To which I told him I wasn't going to admit to doing things I had never done and left. I then apologized to Tenru, saying, quote, "I'm really sorry. Just act like this whole thing never happened." Then on the karate front, there were noises being made about going to Columbia, where Magnum was sent to work as an instructor in a certain dojo, and that sounded right up my alley. So I decided to set off for Columbia. I told Yamaguchi that if I ever came back to Japan and was feeling up for it, I'd be open to listening to an offer, but I wasn't about to own up to things I never actually did, so I turned down his contract. Before you jump in, Mike, and get thoughts on that, because that sounds like Magnum denying some of the embezzling stuff, I want to read what Shima has to say right after that, in which Shima says, "at the time Magnum left, I just thought, oh, that absolute bastard. The only time I learned the truth, what you all heard earlier, was when we reunited last year. I was young then, so I got caught up in the false image of him that had been perpetuated and that was not the truth of the matter. I just sort of accepted I'd probably never see him again. I've said this to Magnum's face previously, but if there were some sort of like-loathe gauge for how I felt about him back then, it would have been 99% loathe, 1% like. And it's really odd, but you don't see the person for a year, then 2 years, 3 years. Over time, that gauge begins to shift. Being able to finally see him again last year, being able to ask him things about that time and get his thoughts on nagging concerns I had, By the end of it, quite frankly, the gauge had completely flipped. Now it was like 99% like, 1% loathe. A complete reversal. I effectively did not hate the man. There was so much stuff he beat into me when I was 18 or 19 and just chatting with the family at home, as well as every 3-4 months, he'd always come up in conversation. I wonder what Magnum's getting up to these days. I'd sort of like to see him again. We don't know anything about the guy anymore. So last year there was a show Eichmann put on and I got to see him again. And when I got home, I was in a state. I must have just looked and acted like I had seen a dead man walking. I literally would not shut up about it. My wife couldn't get to bed. She said, I thought you absolutely hated his guts and then you finally see him again. Just what exactly happened? So then the next month we decided to go out for dinner and I was on cloud nine and leaving home, I was buzzing. It was like 16-year-old me going on a first date.
Yeah.
These guys, I tell ya.
And to be honest, like, we're not going to go through the whole 2.5 hours. Like, the this is not that kind of show. A lot of what is on Magnum's YouTube channel is essentially this kind of stuff. Basically, guys who were forced apart for 18 years that, like, they come back together in their 40s and they realize, hey, you were kind of the older brother who knocked some sense into me and was kind of tough to be around, but I appreciate you now, and now we're forging that kind of relationship. Outside for essentially, and before we get into the allegations portions, this is what's up on Magnum's YouTube, is stuff like this.
Is, yeah, just, you know, saying, saying exactly that. It is interesting to me that he doubles down on, you know, he's not going to admit to something that he didn't do, because the embezzlement story is something that has followed him for almost 20 years now.
Right, yeah. And I think that, at least as it relates to his departure, and with that, he also then talks about being blackballed essentially because of that. And from this departure, but before we get into Sheamus thing, it's worth noting that if you look at what Magnum has all said in a context, it does come off like a big grand conspiracy that started from in 2007 when Toru Kido pulled a fast one on him in his mind and forced him out of the company he constructed.
Yes, yes. Very odd relationship there. So Ozaki asked Shima about his departure from Dragon Gate, and Shima says, with Dragon Gate, the only way I was ever going to leave was in a casket. I gave it my all, and that same principle applies to Glate, which I left last year. I don't know how all of you see it, but I always try to do my very best, put every last ounce of effort into what I'm doing. I've been writing about this in my blog since going freelance, but I've been trying to own up to my side of the things without casting aspersions, just writing about goings on at the time, and that includes the day I decided to leave/quit Dragon Gate. I'd gone to Mexico, and on the way to the airport, I told the person seeing me off that I was going to create a way for Dragon Gate in Tijuana, then got on my flight. In the meantime, back in Japan, it seems like everything kicked off, and so when I was getting into bed in Mexico, I got a phone call asking me when I was coming back. I told them I'd be back on X date. The response was, quote, we want you back now. So I fly back to Japan, we speak about plans going forward, and I wasn't completely on board with all of it. So I said, if this is how things are going to be, then reckon I'll be leaving sooner rather than later. And that's exactly what happened. When I reunited with Magnum, I brought this up, and he said he'd basically heard the same exact thing however many years ago.
And for Shima, that's been consistent from him dating back into the blogs, was this timeline of going to Mexico, getting called back, getting essentially bombarded in a izakaya in Osaka where they said, hey, we are going against Okamura. This is happening. Are you aboard with this? And Shima, out of obligation to Okamura, refuses. And then a unnamed young wrestler says, well, I guess that means we're enemies now. And
which I think you and I have assumed to be Yamato.
I at least from how it would be, I would expect that it could be Yamato, especially when you think about seniority. Like, Yamato would be viewed as a younger wrestler to the two of them because he debuted in 2006, right?
Yeah, if so Yamato's in a room with Shima and Yoshino, he's a younger wrestler compared to those two.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just Japanese cultural hierarchy playing out there, the senpai kohai kind of thing.
So this is February of 2018, because Shima works 2 dates in Mexico. He works a crash show in Tijuana on February 16th, 2018. Shima, mm-hmm. Extreme Tiger, and Rey Horus versus the Lucha Brothers and Rey Mysterio Jr. And then he works DTU the next night. So This is one of those weird sliding doors things, and it's one of the many weird Shima sliding doors things that happen after he leaves Dragon Gate. Is he is I don't know if he's seeing the landscape and is seeing a decline in Japanese wrestling. I don't know what it is, but in the late 2010s, Shima becomes hell-bent on getting back to Mexico. And this is the first time that I've heard him say that he really wanted to establish Dragon Gate and Tijuana, because you have to remember, you know, when they split from Toriumon, and that's a promotion that was, you know, based in Nakampon for, you know, 97 through 2004, and then, you know, Ultimo continued running shows and running the dojo for a time after that. But once Dragon Gate becomes established, they don't have any ties to Mexico until the millennials in 2012, when Eita goes on excursion and when T-Hawk goes on excursion, and then when UT, you know, basically under the cloak of darkness, joins them for a little bit in the spring of 2013. But it was something that they had largely completely abandoned. I mean, by the time that I started watching Dragon Gate in late 2013, I wasn't looking at it as Japan's version of Lucha Libre, whereas maybe people that were getting into Toriumon at the time would have. It was something that they had completely divested from, and Shima seems hellbent here on getting Dragon Gate into Tijuana in 2020. We've talked at length about him moving to Mexico and wanting to be full-time with AAA, and the pandemic sort of squashing that, and that kills his AEW career and his AAA career, which is why I've always told people when they judge Shima with Glate, I go, that was never the plan. You know, that is the break glass in case of emergency. There happened to be a global pandemic that forced Shima back to Japan plan. That's what that was. But it's just interesting because I have never really heard him talk about wanting to establish a presence in Tijuana before.
Yeah, and it's worth noting that Shima was the one person natively, within the Japanese organization that wanted to continue DGUSA. Like, yes. He strongly was always at the international forefront. So the fact that when DGUSA closes up, when it does, he's still trying to find that pipeline. So yeah, it's all, at least from what Shima says, and to compare it to things that we have had on the show and we have talked about, what Shima says does line up with the story from the other side. That essentially that Okamura was going out and the was basically he disagreed to go along with it, and it was like, oh yeah, Okamura's out and we don't want you around either, essentially was what now, was told.
You'll have to remind me because I don't fully remember. Do we know
that was from a Jay show?
Yeah. But do we know what the root of the rift between Okamura and Dragon Gate was? Because, you know, if you ask anybody, in my number one question when I talk to people that were in Dragon Gate pre and post Okamura, you know, pre 2018 and post 2018, the thing that I always want to know, and it's come up with a number of wrestlers over the years, is how has the company changed in the new regime? And from every person that you talk to, the idea of the mental health of the company has improved in a post Okamura universe is the thing that continues to run true. So maybe
and the financial health too was something that I was told, essentially.
Yeah, like, we talked about that with Jay on an episode where I mean Kobe World 2018, if I remember correctly, that was headlined by Shingo versus Yoshino, which in real time, covering that in the moment, it was complete and utter doomsday for Dragon Gate, because whatever the announced number for Kobe World was, people went in with low expectations, and then the number was even lower than that. But if I recall correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but Jay said that was the first Kobe World that actually turned a profit, because they weren't giving away, for instance, 5,000 tickets and comps to sponsors.
Yeah, and essentially, I'm trying to pull up the exact conversation that I've had about this, but it was a situation where, like, the way that Okamura ran his companies, and I say companies plural because it kind of plays into this, it did seem like that the discussion and the overall tone, and not being told specific, but the overall tone is that they were robbing John to pay Peter, essentially. And that a lot of his friends and a lot of his businessmen, and I'm going to leave those with vagaries with saying friends and businessmen, got kind of cut in on Dragon Gate things. And, you know, that was an undertone, was that maybe, and again, there's no specifics, there is a bit of me being a little hesitant because Takashi Okamura passed away last year. He cannot defend himself, but his reputation was never a good thing, and there were always kind of discussions about what his backstory was.
Yes, to put it kindly. So
I just don't feel that good saying about the dead person that I could say what my suspicion is, and I'll say my suspicion. My suspicion was that at one certain point, Okamura was affiliated with certain organizations.
Yes.
I'll just say it.
I think if you look at certain Toriyama-era Korkin shows, I think people would agree with you. So next in my list of things to hit on from the talk show is Shima and Magnum first talking about their relationship with Okamura, and then that sort of delves into them talking about Kido. Are you ready to dive into this, Mike?
Yeah, and I think when we talk about this thing, here is, and as we, Case and I, kind of put this together over the last 2 weeks, I've had essentially like two things that are still kind of open questions to me. From this and a lot of what we will talk about were things that were taken from Yahoo Sports articles and a Battle News thing that Yahoo, I think, licensed onto this. To up until this point, 3:42 p.m. Central Standard Time, Case, I have not seen and have not been able to find out, and someone might be able to go through the MagChan, as it's called, and confirm this. A lot of Magnum's just allegations were not on tape, and I think that is something really worth kind of stating here. And Shima references like an encore.
So explain that to me, because I don't think I follow.
Oh, I pulled the transcript. I tried to do what all I could do from my side, and my card's on the table. I study Japanese, but I'm nowhere near fluent. I'm nowhere near JLPT and 5 for you Japanese studiers. But I went through and I using things for translation and things that have worked for us in the past in translation, being quite frank. A lot of what Magnum says that comes from that Yahoo Sports article, I have not been able to find from the actual video that was posted.
Okay.
And I think that is a important thing to point out, because is this Magnum saying stuff like an off a record thing that a Yahoo Sports guy goes, yeah, that sounds like a great press it. Or is this something that I have not been able to fully like pull the transcript thereof? If that makes sense.
Yes, it does. So Magnum says in relation to Okamura, and this is him talking about hanging out with Shima. So we saw each other for the first time in ages in January, and then we went out for dinner in February. So far, so good. The dates are a blast, a massive lovin'. And then in March, I get a message from Shima saying that he had just met with Okamura. He'd been told things were looking very grim, and he only had so much time left. And Shima wanted to know if I'd go see Okamura. I'd heard from elsewhere that he had been doing poorly, so I was sort of expecting something like this to come up. 2 days later, I wrote back to Shima saying, I don't know. The circumstances behind me leaving are too different to yours. Why would I ever want to go visit the guy who kicked me out of the company? I've been through a lot of shit these past 18 years, and it's not like I can just waltz in there and act like nothing's wrong. He's probably better off left thinking I wouldn't meet with him, so I'm not going. But I am really glad you told him that you'd reconnected with me. Always knowing Okamura, he'd probably understand all of this. So then Shima says, well, actually, I've got a letter for you from Okamura. That whole thing had got me wound up enough already, and so Shima ended up bearing the brunt of it. I went off. Quote, yeah, and what's good reading that letter now going to do me? I'm not getting these 18 fucking years back. I don't care what he's written in there. He's just going to die anyways. Why should I bother? Best just fucking leave it, end quote. This was in March, and we just left things at that. I said I'd read it the next time we met up. So in April, the news came that he had passed away, and I thought I was so far removed from it that it was the only thing I could do, was offer a silent prayer. But then, for whatever reason, a lot of fond memories came flooding back, with none of the rancor. Memories where Okamura had treated me well, stuff like that. It was quite the odd sensation. Maybe this isn't making any sense to you, so let me try to explain it this way. It was 51% positive stuff, where he'd looked after me well versus 49% of the negative stuff. So the positive stuff won out. Conversely, I felt no such feelings towards Kido. I found all of this really bizarre.
poking around to see what sort of reaction there would be. There was no public acknowledgement by Dragon Gate on Okamura's death. None of the wrestlers mentioning anything on social media. And I just thought, I can't believe they're still pulling shit like this. The last thing I said to him at the time was, I'm sorry I caught up in this mess. Stay well. And then 17 years passed, never heard from again. So at dinner with Shima, he handed me Okamura's letter. I still couldn't be bothered, so I just took it and threw it in my bag. What was more important to me was to get Hatoyama's details so I could ring him up then and there. We'll pause just for a second. So this is Hatoyama, who Magnum references, and I think the first sentence that I read during this talk show, is a former Dragon Gate office guy who was exiled from the company in 2007 and has since then not shown any interest in wrestling. Magnum talks about him at length in all of the Hatoyama stuff as, I don't follow Dragon Gate, I don't follow wrestling, I got out, I live a different life now.
Yeah, but if you look at Shima's YouTube, he's all, or Shima's social media, he's all over it now. Funny.
Interesting. So yeah. Magnum continues, after he gets done telling these stories about being on the phone with Hatoyama, Magnum says, and then I remembered that I had Okamura's letter. So I tracked down the bag I had thrown it in and fished it out and gave it a read. In modern parlance, it was like being given the unredacted Epstein files. Absolutely staggering, full of revelations and stuff where I'd be asking myself why I was only finding out about this now. And having read all of it, then I knew the reason for the radio silence on Dragon Gate's end when Okamura died. It seems there had been a falling out between Okamura and the managing director, and it had deteriorated into two men just trying to stuff their pockets as much as they could. I've not shown the letter to Shima, by the way. Won't show it to him. Won't let him read it. So,
but before I think you get
it's
into
important.
This.
I think it's important to note really quick, and please tell me if you disagree. I read his correlation to this being the Epstein files to being bad PR for Dragon Gate that is unrelated to pedophilia.
Right. Yeah, this is Magnum knew what he was said by saying that, essentially. And this is what he literally said. Like, when he calls it the Epstein files. We check to see, like, is that just kind of like how things are? No, he literally calls the deathbed letter the Epstein files. And he gets like this collection of purported sales data that Hatoyama, I guess, absconds, or someone who also passed away absconded with and gave to him, that essentially he calls these Dragon Gate's Epstein files.
And it raises the interesting question, and this is why, like, I'd really like to be in a quiet room with Shima right now, because since leaving Glate, Shima's PR run of kind of scratching his head and being like, guys, I know I was difficult, but come on, you know, have me back. Give me one last Dragon Gate match. It was all going to a point that I found to be.
You were totally positive about it.
it was perversely sympathetic, because, and maybe it's just my relationship with in terms of fandom with Shima, but I was like, give the guy a retirement match. Who cares? But I am so curious to see what the fallout of this is, because again, Magnum's alleging Shima knows about the letter, but Shima hasn't seen it. He doesn't know what's in it. I'm not going to tell him. And Magnum comes on his talk show and says that Okamura wrote something that would be the Dragon Gate equivalent of the Epstein files, which to me is going to make it very hard to book Shima for a retirement match in Dragon Gate.
No. And I think when you, like, you look at the tone, at least of the 2.5 hours that are posted, Case, he was trying to get like, hey, let's talk about stories about Mexico and how much we missed each other and how, you know, I hated you, but I recognize that I love you. Like, that's kind of what I felt like Shima was trying to do. But I also, at the same time, Shima is a smart guy. He had to have known, oh, Magnum's going to do something that's going to get a headline. And Magnum goes and essentially goes scorched earth on this section that is posted by Yahoo Sports.
It's a very jarring thing to read. But again, I think with the context that we have, I just want to note that I have no evidence and no reason to believe that this is linked to anything that would be
to the scope or anything like that.
Of what we recognize as a sex crime. I think that's worth noting. So Magnum,
and it's worth noting that Magnum makes extreme light of both the monkey scandal and the guy and the referee that got arrested for crystal meth.
That's coming up in this patch that I'm about to read. Yeah. So Magnum then details, and I won't read all of this verbatim, but he details a dinner that he had in August of last year with Shima, Masato Yoshino, and Hatoyama in Osaka. And they note that, you know, when the dinner started, it was very heavy. Magnum was very upset. They were talking about Okamura and the legacy that he leaves behind and all these things. And this is something where it's actually, they got lunch at 11 in the morning and they stayed so long that the restaurant shut down. They, you know, they closed. And so they moved to a national izakaya chain in Japan and continued drinking. Magnum notes everybody there was shit-faced, and they start calling Dragon Gate wrestlers. It begins with them jokingly saying, we're going to call Kido and get him over to the restaurant, but they end up calling Dragon Gate wrestlers. They also call Milano Collection AT on his birthday, which is a very funny anecdote. But eventually, what I would assume to be the Toriumon era Dragon Gate wrestlers end up coming to the restaurant and hanging out with Magnum and Shima and Yoshino. And at one point, they go to take a group photo, and that's when the unnamed Dragon Gate wrestler or wrestlers, it's unclear, I believe it's plural at this point, go, hey, we can take the photo, but can you guys please not post it on social media? We don't want this to become a thing. And Magnum is somebody who is not on social media, but that makes him irate because he then realizes that he is on the side that Dragon Gate can't be associated with and that they can't be seen together and that people can't know that they were hanging out. And Magnum calls to task the Dragon Gate office for instilling such behavior.
Yeah, and a major part that Magnum does, and I think this is kind of a thing that can describe it, he is very tired, and this is me being as charitable as possible, of the opacity that Dragon Gate operates in. And it comes out in a lot of different portions here. It starts with this, but Magnum, I don't know if it relates to ego about him, or if it's that he has his own belief of what's right and what's wrong, and he's a supremely wronged individual in his mind. And I think that's the only conclusion you could take about him at this point, is that he feels very wronged and that this is perpetuating the events that wronged him 18 years ago.
So at this point in the talk show, Magnum starts talking about the time he visited the sanctuary after Okamura died. And Mike, for those that don't know, the sanctuary was...
It was a part of this overall building that Okamura owned that had part of one of his karate dojo schools there. The Body Adapt store was a part of it. Essentially, it was Dragon Gate's headquarters up until the end of the Okamura era. And if you've seen Dragon Gate Next or the original Prime Zones before they moved to Kobe Lapis Hall, they all took place at this little venue that they called Sanctuary. But what he's really referring to is the building itself having his photos, I believe.
Yes. So he's talking about going to the Sanctuary, and he says, so we contacted some employees from the Okamura Dojo, and the atmosphere was heavy. First things first, I paid my respects at the family altar, thanking Okamura for the things he'd done for me, lit some incense, and said a prayer for Nanbu as well. And that is somebody who worked in the Toriumon and Dragon Gate office and business affairs who has since passed away. Magnum,
yeah, that's
continued.
The...
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, that is the person that I believe gave the files to Hatayama.
Interesting. Okay, so Magnum then continues. So then they want to know exactly why I'd come, and the mood got really heavy again. You know how I am, so I just spoke my mind, saying, look, he might be your instructor, but I'm just going to be blunt with you. There's loads of shit he tried to pull on me, and that I'll never be able to forgive him for. Loads of shit I'm still furious about, and yet... Recently, I've come to feel grateful for all the things he did for me, and there are a lot of things I want to confer for myself, see with my own two eyes. Much as it pains me to be here in Kobe, because believe me, I would much rather not be, I've got to have some closure, and that starts with me paying my respects to Okamura. I hope you can get where I'm coming from. And then all of it came out. Of course, that would have been the reason why. In brief, the Okamura Dojo side had suffered more than their fair share, too. I came to realize they had been victimized as well, where their people had been put through the exact same things I had been, actually. However, the most shocking revelation from their side was that the current chief executive had inflicted a life-altering injury on an individual. They had been blinded. On my end, I had heard several years ago someone in that circle had been subjected to violence, losing their sight as a result of it. I was able to meet that person, and it was just awful. I know there's people in the company who know about this, but whether that's one man at the top terrorizing everyone underneath him, or it's just accepted as standard procedure there, Who knows? The people from the Okamura Dojo I had spoken to said Dragon Gate wrestlers and staff members had come to pay their respects and light incense, but had done so in secret without the company knowing. That's when I thought something funny was going on there. But the injury that one lad suffered, that was abhorrent. Frankly, I got so worked up about that that I could have killed a man. It's not right. You can't do that sort of thing. I was so beside myself with rage, I was even terrified of myself. But I stayed and chatted with the people from Okamura Dojo some more, bid them farewell, and left. All had been revealed. I'd found my truth. And then there is Hatoyama's story, but we'll have to save that for later. So we left and had lunch, this dark rain cloud over our heads. I don't think we actually said anything to each other until we got back to Osaka. And that is Magnum on visiting the Okamura Dojo.
Yeah, and it's definitely, that is one of the big quotes that I do think that Dragon Gate's probably being active about. I still personally am a little unclear if he's referring to Okamura Kido or whoever assumed Okamura Dojo's ownership, but I'm leading more towards Kido given the other stuff that he says. And it's
I don't know what the current state of the Okamura Dojo is and if it has any ties to pro wrestling whatsoever.
It didn't after he left. Like, I'm fairly certain that it still exists in certain kind of things. Yeah, the Okamura Dojo still, it had like about 12 to like 14 different locations. Like, it was a major it was a major facility, but it I don't know if it's continuing on. I'm assuming it is just because of how big it was, and that's why I'm not positive about it being him, being Okamura, being him, or being Kido.
Gotcha. So that is what they have on Okamura and Kido. And again, it seems fair given the context that if people feel like we're misinterpreting the idea of Kido blinding somebody, please let us know, because you and I both, I think, still have a question mark hanging over our heads on that. But
right,
based on the context of everything, to me, he is saying that Kido blinded somebody, people in Dragon Gate know about it, and people in Dragon Gate haven't done anything about it.
Right, and he claims other things about the operation of Dragon Gate, too.
Would you like to expand on that at all?
Right. He, later on in the talk, goes on about the way that that he's talked to people within Dragon Gate and how Dragon Gate's history being closed off and how it handles young roster discontent, claiming that wrestlers have come to Magnum and not being allowed to quit. Magnum, yes, says that when Harada and him, Kazuki Harada, the DDT wrestler who impersonates him, finally broke bread, Shinshiro Takagi was with him, and he essentially goes off on Shinshiro Takagi. And it seems like ever since, he has made a big deal about essentially the ability to quit wrestling promotions, and he lays it out kind of in a very idealistic sense, I would say. Mm-hmm. That like, if you don't want to wrestle somewhere, you should be allowed to go. And that's a thing that I think is a larger kind of topic here, if we want to get into that right now. I don't know if you have the quotes with that part that you were going to talk about.
So this let's talk about Dragon Daya here, because I want to talk about Daya in this podcast.
He does kind of
do this.
Yeah, because there's a situation right now. Dragon Daya has not been seen since Uno Dos Trace Dragon Gate. His merch is not being sold and social media has gone dark.
And I believe he worked the first Osaka show on February 28th. Uno Dos Trace was the 23rd in Fukuoka. He worked that first Osaka show and then has not been seen since. So since the month of March, because that first Osaka show was on February 28th. So I have talked to a lot of people about Dragon Daya in the last week. And if you are a fan of Dragon Gate, and in particular a fan of Dragon Daya, I feel comfortable saying with the information that I have that I would expect the worst, meaning that we have probably seen Dragon Daya wrestle his last match in Dragon Gate. I have heard a number of different things, some from people that I trust, some from people that just like talking. None of it has been steered back towards this is a family emergency, or he's injured, or he's going through a personal problem. The tone of every conversation I have is that we have probably seen Dragon Daya wrestle his last match in Dragon Gate. As that pertains to New Japan, I have talked to people within New Japan, and it seems to be, for lack of a better term, a dark Twitter known secret at this point. New Japan is actively scouting for juniors to raid and juniors to poach. They are looking to restock their juniors division, and they are looking to do it with already existing, already established wrestlers. And what I heard from somebody specifically today was that Daya has been labeled as somebody that is, quote, extremely poachable. On top of that, I then asked a New Japan wrestler specifically if he knew anything about it. He said that's above his pay grade. But in terms of the Daya stuff, because I believe when we talk about Magnum Tokyo talking about wrestlers not being able to leave Dragon Gate, which we'll get to that quote here in just a second, I believe he is referencing Dragon Daya specifically. And if you're a fan of him, I would be prepared to buy a Lion Mark branded t-shirt, because it would appear, based on the information that I have, and as a fan of the promotion, I would love to be wrong, but it would appear that Daya is on his way out of Dragon Gate.
Yeah. And it does seem to me to be like a thing that it's no secret about Dragon Gate's pay. And I, a little bit, the more that they got in with New Japan, the more I started going like, yeah, New Japan doesn't have money, but Dragon Gate Super doesn't have money. So there's an aspect of that. And I would say that there has been, if you want to look at least everything since 2018, there has been a concerted shuffling of older wrestlers out, and some of that has been directly to pay younger wrestlers, but there's also been countless instances, frankly, I mean, really of the last 4 years, of whenever someone goes dark case, and we witnessed this with Shimizu, and at least a little bit of it, like, fortunately, it was not a full exit with Shimizu, but it has become a thing, and it's really noticeable when you look at native social media. It's become a thing that, like, young wrestlers don't stick around Dragon Gate, and like people are that there's a big optic hit about like, okay, Kaito Ishida, and then the SBK and Takuma Fujiwara situations, and then like even, and it's not even contract based, but like the overall kind of quietness around Takuma Nishikawa when he left. And I mean, this is a company that has been extremely closed off about how it operates. It always handles stuff within the room, and it does seem like that there is a situation that has happened over the last like really 8 years of not necessarily handling exits necessarily well. And I mean, you can even kind of draw it back to Shingo Takagi, where it was always a thing that Shingo wanted to go freelance way before 2018, and for whatever reason, the excuse was like his contract or something would not allow him to do so. So there is a question about how these contracts operate. And I am not a lawyer, and I'm especially not a Japanese business law lawyer. But given the things that Magnum has said about like the roster members and young wrestlers not being able to go, it does make you wonder, like, is this like a contractual based thing where like they are contractually like signing over their ability to work for that time period and can only work within this one company? Or is this a latent, unspoken kind of blackball sort of thing?
It's a very odd situation. You know, about 3 weeks ago, so this would have been when Daya was still actively wrestling in Dragon Gate, the poster for the spring Hokkaido tour dropped, and we all thought it was a spoiler that Hyo was not going to be in Best of Super Juniors and that Daya would be. Because you have to remember, we've heard for almost a year now that it looks like Hyo would be in Super Juniors 2026. And I think on a personal level, you know, you and I have always been in favor of Hyo, but for those that are maybe listening to this episode that are not super tuned into what Dragon Gate is doing right now, and certainly those that normally get recommendations from me that have maybe wondered why I've gone quiet, it's because there's been nothing to recommend in February and March. It's been a very dark time for the company in ring and with the storylines that they're doing right now. It's not awesome.
We'll give the recommendation on air right now. The one thing worth watching from the last week is Yuma Anzai versus Yoshiki Kato. That's
yes.
It.
So if you're not somebody that's been keeping up with Dragon Gate, and maybe, you know, you have just memories of either 2018 or 2021 or, you know, 2024, whatever year it may be, and you hear Hyo and Super Juniors, and you might naturally roll your eyes at that and go like, oh my God, did we dodge a bullet? Because Hyo is on the Hokkaido tour poster and Dragon Daya is not. It's a huge disappointment for Dragon Gate fans because Hyo is doing the best work of his career right now. And I am going to rally really hard for him. He's 29 years old. It's the 10th year of his career. He is somebody that absolutely should be on the Voices of Wrestling 30 under 30 this year. He's become an upper echelon Dragon Gate performer in a way that I don't think showcases top of the line deterioration, but rather Hyo has just taken a step up. And given that New Japan Juniors roster right now, I think Hyo would kill it in a Super Juniors tournament. And they have seen New Japan has fed into this idea over the last year that Hyo would be in that tournament this year.
He wins their bodybuilding contest last year. Yeah.
I can't remember if it was a Despy Produce show. There was something else that happened New Japan related that really made it seem like they were leaning into Hyo being a Super Junior.
It was Taiji Shimori.
Thank you. It was the Taiji show. That's right.
Yeah. When there was like the endless like gauntlet match, he was a part of the Dragon Block. And he was part of the Muscle Block. And everyone was going, holy shit, Hyo is more jacked than everyone else in the promotion. And not to head you off here, I do kind of wonder if there is a bit of, oh, Hyo's not on this because we're poaching Daya.
Yes. My God, completely. I mean, this changes the political ramifications in Japan quite a bit, because I'm trying to think, and this is where my contemporary New Japan knowledge is going to fail me, but I get the impression that if New Japan takes Daya, that feels like a shot across the bow in a way that certainly Shingo leaving Dragon Gate and going to New Japan did not feel like. And I'm trying to remember the last New Japan signing that would have been like, oh, they got so-and-so? That's going to really hurt that promotion.
The DDT stuff in 2013, 2014 when they got Ibushi, and then when they were making waves onto Kashida and Endo.
Okay, possibly,
and that killed that relationship basically up until United Japan reforming.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. That feels like an apt comparison to me, because I'm just not seeing a scenario in which Daya would go to New Japan and then Dragon Gate would send them a junior for Super Juniors, or send them a tag team for the Super Juniors
or
tournament,
anything,
or send them a wrestler for the G1. I'm just not seeing that. And that feels like that would be in the post-COVID Japanese wrestling landscape, where everybody wants to hold hands and work together, with the exception of Dragon Gate and Glate, this feels like it would be the first major fracture. And for Dragon Gate, who is already a company that oftentimes isolates itself, or, you know, God, I mean, unfortunately, they sometimes lean on Noah's shoulders. Very rarely do they lean on All Japan shoulders. This feels like this would be a pretty massive break in political alignment.
And it would throw United Japan into question, because getting back to kind of Magnum, he talks a lot about United Japan needs to be doing things about this inability for wrestlers to quit, at least in his mind. And he brings up Shinshiro Takagi, talks about on the 28th that he talked to him earlier this day about it. Shinshiro Takagi notably is the representative director of United Japan. Do you know who his VP in United Japan is, or one of his VPs are?
I do not.
Ryo Saito.
Okay, so let me read this quote from Magnum. And then,
please do.
You're a little bit more dialed in on just, and I think you might be the only person dialed in on the existence of United Japan, but specifically in the context of this, this is something that you've mentioned to me a few times, and I'm having a harder time wrapping my head around it. So Magnum says, this is after he mentions meeting Takagi and sort of taking him to task the first time. Magnum says, by way of example, at Dragon Gate now, they won't allow the younger wrestlers to quit. I just don't get why they're so intent on sabotaging the work of the young people who do manage to get out of who do manage to get out, or painting people who quit a long time ago as villains. I always just think, honestly, how long are you going to keep this up for? It's like, do you even know why I just took it on the chin, swallowed your bullshit, and kept strumming for 18 years? Maybe this is a bad analogy, and if so, apologies. But they're like this legendary high school or university sports team with all of these amazing players in the past. But then 10 years go by, 20 years go by, and all of a sudden that school isn't even making the regional preliminaries, and you can't help but wonder just exactly what they're getting up to in training. Look, there was a little trouble with the monkey and that one fellow that got caught with meth. Everyone makes mistakes, but people learn from their mistakes. You're young, it happens. But this is going on after all this time, and it's people in their 40s and 50s. And I feel like there's something wrong with the trend of keeping these young wrestlers who see this as their choice and are doing their best down. I've raised the matter with Sanshiro, the chief director of United Japan Wrestling, saying how much I wish he would set up a help desk to provide emergency assistance for younger wrestlers who want to quit, but their promotions won't let them. I think it's really important for there to be someone who can investigate matters and intervene. There's someone in charge of a promotion out there abusing people. It's an open secret, but everyone just keeps going about it. And if you know about something going on like that, but still keep going, then you're basically saying that it's fine for that to go on. Those in positions to prevent that sort of thing just look the other way. And then he continues. Actually, just the other day, I was speaking to someone in Dragon Gate and told them, look, mate, there's no point in whining about it to me. Whatever it is you've got to do, do it yourself. If you're going to quit, then just fucking quit. And then he says, and this is the Dragon Gate wrestler, yeah, but honestly, what the fuck? This is Magnum talking again. Honestly, what the fuck? And I've had the same conversation however many times now. Someone's got to come out and say something at this point, but doing so must be terrifying because that's the world they inhabit and that's their livelihood.
So first, Magnum, I feel like really slighted about your national champion going downhill for 20 years kind of comments. I feel like that was unnecessarily targeted at America's sweethearts, the Miami Hurricanes. But
that in itself is, mm-hmm. It's why...
It's a point that like Joe makes all the time.
It is. And it's not one that I agree with. I don't think the True. Working standard in Dragon Gate... I think it went from... let me put it this
it evolved.
Way. I watch current day New Japan, and a lot of the time I go, how the fuck does anybody watch this promotion? These guys can't fucking work. I hate all of these new heavyweights. I hate the storylines. I hate their look. I hate the vibe. I watch current day New Japan the same way that Joe Lanza watches current day Dragon Gate, where I sit there and I go, people are telling me this is good, and I fucking hate what I'm watching. I obviously don't have that problem with Dragon Gate. And I would put the work that Kame does, the work that Rita does, the work that Yamato's been doing, the work that Shun Skywalker has been doing. And by the way, because I meant to mention this earlier, Skywalker and Cielo are not on the Hokkaido tour poster. I would not read into that. I think they're just getting that tour off, which is annoying fans in Hokkaido that Skywalker is not going to be there. But nevertheless.
But also, you have a cage match. So, you know.
Yes, possibly. There's a chance that Cielo is not wearing a mask by the time that we get to Hokkaido. So, but anyways, I don't personally agree with the analogy that Magnum is making. I think that is the sort of thing that makes me question Magnum's credibility in all of this, is that he might have a valid point that there should be a help desk that helps wrestlers leave promotions, and that Japan's way of contracting and keeping wrestlers could be modernized, or at the very least, and this is my white American brain saying this, but maybe adapted to the Western world a little bit. I also think it's possible that perhaps there's some really nefarious things going on in the Dragon Gate office that people should be investigating, and maybe the culture in that workplace is dire and needs to be improved. But Magnum saying, hey, look at what I was doing, look at the talent that I pumped out compared to these guys now, I don't think that helps him in any way at all.
No, and I think at this point I could say what my real belief is on Magnum, if you haven't been able to pick up on it for the last 70 minutes, it really reeks of opportunism from him in a lot of ways. Like the fact that he basically spends a long time saying that all the ills of this promotion go back to 2007, because that's when I got fired by this guy. And everything is this one guy's fault ever since. And everything that you dislike about modern Dragon Gate, it's this guy. And it makes total sense the way that why Dragon Gate would react after what he's alleging. I mean, he's alleging that Toru Kido has done criminal things, like straight up. And it does, though, it's a bit of the modernization, or at least the westernization, however you kind of want to say like of it. And like culturally, like there's always been an open question about what United Japan is supposed to be doing, right? Like, it seemed like a way that when Hiroshi Hase was like the minister of sport and culture in Japan coming out of COVID, that it came about as like, hey, we don't want to give money directly to these wrestling promotions, form an NGO, and we'll give money to the NGO, and the NGO will handle it. And ever since that point, all you ever see outside of the United Japan shows that have not happened, and I think now I'm not looking this up, Case, but it feels like in over a year there's not been a United Japan show.
Oh, I think we're coming up on two. I mean, I'll confirm, but I think we're coming up on 2 years.
But Case, the only time that like United Japan is in the news, you know where you can find the United Japan news? Dramatic DDT, Jamie OD is the one person who always talks about like, oh, this happened at United Japan. And part of that's because Shinshiro Takagi, founder of DDT, VP of CyberFight, is affiliated with it. But this is an NGO that essentially does nothing at this point. So it is kind of, in a way, they should be doing things. Absolutely. There should be a way for anything for like a help desk for wrestlers, like not just for like leaving the promotion. If there's just general malfeasance / whistleblowing, that is what this organization should be doing. But it seems like Magnum has picked like something that he can kind of fixate on as, you should be the one that fix this, not me, because I am a victim as much as anyone else on this.
It has been since June 2024 that United Japan has only run two branded shows, and that was
right.
The
it was
last
those all together. And it was after the Noto earthquake that they were doing those.
Main event: Tetsuya Naito versus Jake Lee. I must admit that I did not watch that match, nor
I did.
Will I ever. That sounds awful.
Remember, that was the show that Monte like blew out his shoulder on.
Well, no, that was a Noah show.
I thought it was one of the United Japan ones.
No, it was a Noah show because it was right around... I complained about this on the show at the time. It was right around the time that Ultimo worked Noah and did It was the same Ultimo comeback that we see in every Ultimo Dragon match, but it happened in Noah, and so it got gift, and people were like, look at Ultimo Dragon, he can still go. And like, he does this every show. That's the only thing he does every show. I always make the joke that I, a non-trained professional wrestler, could bump and feed the Ultimo Dragon comeback because I know it beat by beat. It's not hard. I've seen him do it 10,000 times. And then Monte did like a 450 and blew out his shoulder. That's when that happened. But this was there were no Dragon Gate guys on this show. They only worked the first one, which was in Budokan, and they had, I think, Yamato. Yeah, I mean, Yamato worked a 10-man tag, and it was Kai and Taichi versus Chris Brooks and Zack Sabre Jr. And then Shun Skywalker on the main event. So they had quite a bit of representation on the first show, none on the second. I guess I've always been confused on what the idea of United Japan should be, and I think a lot of people feel the same way.
Right, yeah. And it does, like, as it relates to, like, Dia, and as it relates to, like, the exits of people within Dragon Gate, I'm going to read something that came out. So the Yahoo thing essentially has been out for a week. Like, Yamato came back from WXW, was able to access the Japanese version of Yahoo Sports, and chose violence. There have been people affiliated in and around Dragon Gate and former wrestlers who have posted about this. And there is a rather long thread. I'm going to say this. I am using the Twitter translation here. It is probably not right. We don't use this for really anything, to be quite honest. Just for this, I'm going to go through this. But this comes from SBK Kento. There's all sorts of circumstances and situations that make it hard to say this, but the power of a company's organization is strong. That's something I realized once I stepped outside. Looking back now, I feel gratitude for being nurtured there, and yet also think if I'd only been able to be more honest about the time. But back then, I had this intense desire to go overseas and fight harder. And with superstars right there close by, I could picture myself imagining my future. And then goes into, I wonder if I'd be driving the bus or just endlessly touring the country by bus for a player of a career like this. What's the pay? What's the age? Does someone have to be to reach this level? I thought about all sorts of things. And it might have been the moment in my life I made my first major decision. And before I knew it, I was in Mexico. And by September this year, it'd be 4 years for me. Time really flies. LOL sweat, writing as a freelancer in Mexico. I've managed to join Lucha Libre AAA, one of the two major organizations in Mexico, but me and Fujiwara are such idiots that life is tough. I'm not satisfied. I'm actually doing part-time work here, saying that he's working as well as making his AAA dates, surviving tenaciously like a cockroach. March is the month with the most matches since coming to Mexico, 12 matches, super hot, and yet I got injured the other day. If I were in Japan, I'd have to sit out, no question. But I'm pushing through and playing anyway. Necessity demands it. I've even started getting called for TV matches. And finally, my final interview for my American visa is coming up at last. Let me say that again. American visa. Reuniting in America. That'd be pretty hilarious, right? Pointing emoji. Getting an American visa is seriously tough. And this is the interesting part about this. It's because companies that Japanese wrestlers are affiliated with are pretty much all the same that I've constantly been interfered with within this process. There has been even an incident that I tried a different route, paid 600,000 yen, which would be American dollars. Geez, that would be $4,500. To Fujiwara as an intermediary along with another person, got scammed. And I've always been able wanting to break into America with Fujiwara. People who can take action or people who can't, if I've had to say which one I like, I prefer people who can take action. And I wouldn't be on that side by myself.
So explain the 6,000 yen thing to me again, because I don't understand what's going on there.
Oh, Kento is saying that essentially he's been like, everyone has been sort of blocking the visas. WWE kind of is the way to do it, that he even once tried to go through an intermediary that was charging him 600,000 yen. Again, that's about $4,500 to do this, and he got bilked out of it.
Okay.
So, and that came out just right after he saw the Yahoo News article, and he says, after this, everything in life is fate. In life, failing and learning even takes a detour in the process along the ways. There should be all kinds of experiences and encounters. And then he posts a photo from what I think is the Japanese restaurant that he works at also.
So. The Kento stuff is so odd for me because, again, we were so close to that situation. Mm-hmm. And I always tell people when Kento comes up, I think a majority of the listening audience knows the bare bones details about what happened with Kento and Fujiwara and why they're not in Dragon Gate. But there's other stuff, not in a criminal sort of way, but there's other stuff, other infractions that were made that led to their dismissal from Dragon Gate that have never really been reported. And I still don't feel comfortable giving all those details based on what we heard. I would always love another source to back me up on that. And I've never been able to get full, exact 100% confirmation in a way that makes me feel comfortable sharing it. But it's not as simple as they got caught smoking weed, they were gone from Dragon Gate. And this is, you know, something that happened where, you know, you got to remember Kento was back in Japan in March of 2023. Because he left for excursion in 2022. So he was back in Japan in March of 2023. He was at those Champion Gate shows in Osaka, fully expecting to, you know, do one last shot in Mexico and then come back to Dragon Gate. And then we heard the week of Dead or Alive, so that is the first week of May, that Kento was gone. And then I think it was maybe around the Hokkaido tour or that first week of June. It might have been a month after we had first heard that he was gone, that it was made official that he and Fujiwara were gone. I understand, you know, in the same way that Magnum is being seen as an opportunist here and Shima's trying to babyface himself towards the Dragon Gate office, it seems like Kento is trying to babyface himself towards the general public, but my sympathy only goes so far there. Now, look, I have said since the very beginning, I think if I were in the New Japan office and I was able to and if I had the power to hire SP Kento and Takuma Fujiwara, I would do that. The same goes for the All Japan office. The same goes for the DDT office. I have said since the very beginning that politically it would be almost impossible, given what happened in Mexico, for Kento and Takuma to make their way into NOAH. That certainly, between not only the AAA connection to WWE and the WWE connection to NOAH, but because of some other things that have happened in NOAH, if they were going to work Japan, that has somehow in 2026 at the start of the year gone from the least likely option to the most likely option.
And 100%,
And I think it is fucked up if Dragon Gate is telling other companies that they can't hire Kento and Fujiwara. But it is also true that Kento and Fujiwara, at least over what we've known over the last 3 years, are guys that I would deem young and irresponsible, young and immature, guys that might not be worth the headache, because while Kento
Kento mentioned it himself.
Yes. I mean, look, Kento, to me, when I watch him wrestle, he still possesses an otherworldly charisma that I am just completely sucked into. Fujiwara, though, like, Fujiwara was in Dragon Gate for 6 months. He never scored a pinfall in Dragon Gate, okay? This guy was in Dragon Gate for 6 months 4 years ago, and he has since worked part-time in Mexico. His body, and I don't know how else to analyze this, his body has only gotten weirder. I'm stunned they made AAA Fox Latin America TV once. I don't know if there's any plans to have them back on TV, but if I'm Mark Calloway and I see Kento and Takuma walking through that hallway, I probably don't want them on my TV. So they've inflicted a lot of damage on themselves, just based on the things that we know. And for that reason, even if, again, like Magnum, there might be valid points that Kento is making there, I have a really hard time sympathizing him to the degree that I think Kento wishes everybody would sympathize for him.
Yeah, and he just seems like to be kind of like the one person to have actually said anything. You know who I did not check to see if he said anything? As we're recording, great production here, Mike. You're doing awesome. Wonder what Kaito has said, or if anything.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen anything from Kaito Ishida because he's a guy that will stick his nose in this every once in a while. I haven't seen anything from T-Hawk, and I haven't seen anything from Ishida.
Yeah, I'm going through his social media. No, he has not said anything about this. And I mean, his situation, you know, kind of, it seems like in a way is like kind of indicative of how things have kind of gone with these younger wrestlers leaving, you know, I mean, disappears for 3 months and without anything. And of course, there was the whole situation with the fake Kaito Ishida that's not worth getting into here. But he like goes away and then reappears in Glate, and then all fire kind of happens, and it feels like at that moment really is when the Cold War is really starting between the two groups.
When Ishida jumps?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the weird thing with Ishida, and this is maybe this is something that credits Magnum's talking point and Kento's talking point, is, you know, there was a time there where Ishida was working a lot of All Japan. And then Dragon Gate started their business relationship with All Japan, and you saw Ishida get removed from those cards. And it's been a few years now since he's been in that promotion, but that is not specific to Dragon Gate. That is just, those are the politics at play here, in the same way that you would see with AEW and CMLL, New Japan and WWE and AAA. I mean, there's things that happen in the business world that you might not like, but that's the way business is done. And to me,
mm-hmm.
Dragon Gate saying, hey, if we're going to work with you, and you're going to, you know, we're going to share Naruki Doi among other talents, you can't have Kaito Ishida on those shows. To me, that's not evil, because Ishida made the choice to leave Dragon Gate.
Right. And I think like that's a situation that also kind of colors this, like the fact that all of these kind of departure kind of things happened. And Ishida's kind of feels indicative of the way that they kind of operated with it. But yeah. Were there other quotes and other things you wanted to touch on with this case? I feel like we've kind of hit on most of the things. I'm going through my news kind of coverage, or at least my format myself, and I feel like those are most of the things. Again, I would like to say that this the interesting thing kind of about this is that it's only really on those news coverages and not the show itself, at least from what I've been able to see. And I mean, Magnum's channel is out there, and if folks are able to pull those quotes from Magnum's channel explicitly, then I think that colors this also in a different way too.
I think the most interesting fallout of all of this is it's a little bit like when Punk went on Art of Wrestling in mm-hmm. 2014, and you know, Cabana was right to get the interview. He was right to host him. It was his friend. And then, and as we've seen over the last decade, that interview had such negative ramifications on Colt Cabana's life in a way that he never could have expected as they were recording that podcast. And maybe I'm out to lunch for even thinking that Shima at any point in time had any shot of retiring in a Dragon Gate ring, but I don't think Kido will be dramatically affected by this. I don't think Okamura will be dramatically affected by this. I don't think Yamato or SB Kento will be dramatically affected by this. I think the guy that the gun is going to turn towards is going to be Shima. And I think he is the guy that will suffer if there is any fallout from this, which I think is really interesting.
And if we talk about like the fallout and where things are going, Shima's almost completely sold out his 29th anniversary show on May 11th. He is in this comeback. He's having Magnum be like his manager, like a manager for that. So he, at least at this point, is not disengaging. In case I had something that I did not put on my document for you, there is going to be another talk show, and it's already been announced. It has also appearing for the talk show, other than Shima and Magnum Tokyo, is Masato Yoshino. And Case, I will be stunned if you're able to kind of pull this out, but we're going to play a little bit of game here. First and foremost, where is this talk show going to take place? It's not in Tokyo.
I would imagine Osaka.
It's in Nagoya. And take a guess, when is this talk show?
I would now guess, given that information, that it will take place the last week of April.
It is on April 26th.
Okay, that is, for those that don't know, that is the same day as Dragon Gate's Golden Coliseum, which is what used to be Dead or Alive, but in a new building, has been rebranded.
Right, yeah, and I'm looking at the time. Oh boy, it finishes at, it's starting at 2 p.m. that one, and Golden Coliseum bell time is listed at 3 p.m. So interesting. Oh no, they're going at the same time. They're going head to head. I apologize. So boy, that is, I think that kind of colors things when I discovered that.
Well, at least if there's anything good that comes from Yoshino getting involved, you know, you and I have talked about this at length for the last 5 years now, because it was 2021 when Yoshino retired, and which is already 5 years, which is insane to think about. And, you know, we heard for years and years and years from multiple people with varying relationships to Dragon Gate that the succession plan was always that Masato Yoshino would inhabit the role that Ryo Saito currently inhabits. And we have never been able to hear what happened with Yoshino and why that didn't happen the way that we all thought it was going to, which has been a really interesting thing in my mind. So I would imagine if Magnum goes to the places that he went in this talk show, that Yoshino, I would hope, would address some of that. I mean, maybe everybody was wrong, but we heard for years from multiple sources that this was going to be Yoshino's company once he retired, and that obviously did not turn out to be. So that is something that I would like to have them discuss at the end of April.
Yeah, I'm actually right now looking at something that an interview I did around the split in 2018, saying explicitly that Yoshino was a surprise to be a part of it, and that there was at that time a 5-year plan to transfer things over to a management committee. And, you know, we'll see how that kind of things goes from there. Worth noting, just kind of looking back over my notes, and some of these notes are, again, from 2018. The split with Shima was weird at the time for when it was announced, because there was no Dragon Gate people at the press conference. There was no Kido shaking hands with Shima. There was no kind of like this. It was the Strong Hearts guys kind of doing their own press conference at that time. And it's interesting, I guess, for me, just for the kind of figure that Kido has always kind of cut with this. And I would have to say that I have not had in-person kind of interactions with Kido like this, but it's still like the accusations that, in a lot of ways, to me, it's not that they don't match the person. It just seems so completely like, okay, on top of this, on top of this. And on top of the fact that he was saying this when Okamura, I mean, we reported on Okamura being a physically abusive owner at that time. And
yeah, that's something that I think
it's a muddy situation.
To the first podcast we did with Jay during the pandemic, so probably coming up right on 6 years. It was March of 2020, if not early April of 2020. Mm-hmm. Then that was when Jay talked at length about some of the things that Okamura did and some of his weird behavior. And it was stuff that, again, I mean, Okamura ran, on the surface, a very successful business, but I don't think he was ever looked at as a guy with any sort of great reputation. And that is something that followed him quite literally to his grave. And we talked last year at length about the weirdness of him passing away and who said what and who didn't say anything. And there was no 10 bell salute. And, you know, Magnum alleges here that members of the Drangate office and members of the roster went to the Okamura Dojo basically under a cloak of darkness and secrecy to pay their respects. But they know that publicly they can't be affiliated with him in any way. And it's just, it's a very odd thing. And I think Dragon Gate is a promotion that, you know, there, I talk about this all the time. I don't think people realize how long Dragon Gate has existed now. And I say that in a complimentary sense when I talk about the careers of Susumu and of Dragon Kid and of Masaki Mochizuki, these guys that I think are all-time great wrestlers that have legitimately been great for almost 30 years now, which is insane. That's like a wrestler being great from 1969 to 1999. But I also think, as time goes on, wounds get deeper, people get more sinister, people get more paranoid, and I think we're dealing with very grown-up problems in Dragon Gate right now that they haven't really had to face a ton over their history.
Right, and I would say, like, speaking on the 30-year thing as well, I mean, you in a lot of ways have had the same people in and around, in the room, running outside of the room, running the office, running the day-to-day. By and large, a lot of the people that are there, like the thing has been, it's the company basically working as a co-op, but they have been there for those 30 years and things get calcified. And I think there's a lot of historical comparisons of like not only just like businesses, but organizations that, you know, just because the passage of time and plaudits and people may come in and come out, but the organizational culture gets calcified and things that maybe weren't necessarily like the norm, but because you do it for so damn long and you've done it for 30 years, it's kind of become its own sort of thing. And that's not always a good thing. I mean, sometimes in a lot of cases when things calcify like this, it's more often greatly negative. So if anything, and if there's like a positive that can kind of come out of this situation is, and if you're someone like thinking about the future of Japanese pro wrestling and the future of Dragon Gate, is from this dark moment, from a company that somehow over the last 30 years, case, I don't know how why Dragon Gate has always been, and dating back to the Tormonde, such a dramatically put together and torn apart company at times, but one can.
Well, I don't think that's an accident. I mean, look, you know as well as I do.
I mean, these were teenagers who essentially got to run the circus.
Teenagers who got to run the circus, but also just inherently, as somebody that, you know, speaks to wrestlers on an independent level, on a nationally televised level, wrestlers that wrestle professionally in Japan, for other companies that aren't Dragon Gate, and wrestlers that wrestle for Dragon Gate. Dragon Gate wrestlers have a completely different mentality in terms of the way that, I'm not talking about in ring. There is a culture that is instilled in Dragon Gate wrestler that is so far removed. Yes. And it makes this job harder because nobody wants to talk about anything ever because they adhere to, I would say at this point, a stricter kayfabe than anything that CMLL does. It's the thing with the American tours, and they adhere to this in a very strict way. You've got your babyface bus and you've got your heel bus, and that is true throughout Japan. I mean, it is a different culture than we see anywhere else in wrestling.
Yeah, and I'd say that like this mindset is like such a strong thing that, I mean, like, let's be completely frank, and I feel like, case, like we have been throughout this episode, this is not an easy episode for the two of us to do because we know how the company is going to react and people in and within and around the company are going to react to some things like this. But it's just, we have an obligation for it.
Yeah, I'm not bothered by that. We have a job to do.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a reality that is exclusive to Dragon Gate versus most other promotions that people who cover a single promotion on a podcast, like, not disparaging, not being rude, but like, Joel and Damon wouldn't be at risk of like losing sourcing and things like this. But
oh my God, the New Japan guys won't shut up. I'm getting New Japan scoops. I don't care about that promotion.
but like the point remains is that like this is such a cloistered organization and it develops such a cloistered mindset that you get to see there are positive examples of this. I mean, you look at someone like Pac who is coming through the system, and I would say out of anyone who's not a native Japanese wrestler, with the exception of maybe Monte and Jason, he is the one who embodies like kind of the mindset and the way to do business. And there's no one who has an unkind word to say about PAC. And a lot of that was forged because of the mentality in Dragon Gate. But I think we're seeing now how that mindset works negatively.
Yes.
Well, Case, I think unless you have any other notes or anything else you want to touch on, I think that's going to do it for this week.
We'll talk more about in-ring happenings next week. We've got Kakuta versus Kai set for the Dreamgate belt on the April Corkin show, which I have nuanced thoughts on. I will always say I don't think it's fair when people see Kai's name and roll their eyes. I think he's a much better wrestler than that. I think he's proved himself to be much more than that. But goddamn, do I not want to see Kai in a Dreamgate match in April of 2026. So we'll talk about that more next week.
Absolutely. And you could follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. You can follow Case at _InYourCase on Twitter. I'm at Fujiheya on Twitter. Just a quick thing before we go, you can step inside the Voices of Wrestling Discord. That's where we have the Open the Voice Gate channel whenever we do historical shows, including those days, which we had a new episode out last week of that. It is posted there, as well as the Dragon Gate channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. But that's going to do it for us this week on Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next time talking about Dragon Gate and Ring, actually. So take care, everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.